Well, I think I will begin with a short summary of what we have done last time. I mean, maybe I went too fast. And probably I will not be able to cover everything I promised, but anyway, for I realized I have a short text which may be a good summary for the previous lecture, and I will send it to the organizers to be put on the web. So let me start with so what was the ideology behind what I discussed the other day? Well, the idea was to make a first step towards a thermodynamics of stationary non-equilibrium states. So that was the since we don't have general principles so far for such a situation, so we had to be guided by models, and this, in this respect, models have been really essential. And so what we achieved was the following, that that was where the last transparencies of the previous lecture. So we found out that, in fact, also in non-equilibrium stationary state, we can define a non-equilibrium entropy of free energy. I mean, they essentially coincide per the sign in the situation we considered. And again, we have a maximum principle to define the stationary state. So the values of the thermodynamic variables at the stationary state. Then for all these models we considered, one can prove that you have hydrodynamic equations, so which are completely determined by two quantities, which are actually defined by the equilibrium distribution. One is the diffusion coefficient, and the other one is the, let me call it the Onsager matrix, it's there. And A is an external field. Now, since I've been asked this question several times, when I speak of an external field, I speak of a weak external field. So, otherwise, you don't have a diffusive behavior. So, and this type of equation can be obtained from the microscopic model by a rescaling, in some, in fact, scaling limit. Then, from this approach and studying large deviations and generalizing to the dynamical setting, where dynamical setting I mean the microscopic evolution, we obtained an expression of the entropy in terms of dynamical variables, or dynamical quantities. Dynamical quantities, I mean again the diffusion coefficient and the Onsager matrix. And from this expression, we derived for conservative systems a Hamilton-Jacobi type equation, which, since our thermodynamic variables are functions of space, so these are these brackets are integrations over space, and from this equation you can prove immediately that a kind of H theorem for this for the solutions of this equation. And what I wanted to emphasize is that now we have an equation for the entropy out of equilibrium, and the Onsager case near equilibrium, one can see easily that it is a solution of this equation. Once one assumes, and this has been discussed by Derrida, that the equilibrium entropy is a local function of the thermodynamic variable. So, in this case, then one finds trivially the solution to this equation and goes back to Onsager theory. Well, Then I discussed briefly the composition of the hydrodynamics in terms of which again follows from this Hamilton-Jacobi equation. So the right-hand side of the hydrodynamics, so the divergence of a current, because they are divergence type equation, can be split in two parts. One is related to the non-equilibrium thermodynamic force, but then you get also a term which is non-dissipative. In fact, it is orthogonal to the first one, and which has an ephemeral reverse of the transformation properties of a Lorentz force. So it's there is nothing magnetic in this case, but the transformation properties. Okay, now you may ask, what do you do with such an equation? Well, the first thing that we realized, you see, some years ago, Derrida, Leibovitz, and Speer derived for the simple exclusion process out of equilibrium to construct the entropy, or free energy, as you want to call it. You have to solve an ordinary differential equation, highly nonlinear ordinary differential equation, which was derived by the algebraic technique that Derrida described the other day. And this equation, I must say, looked to me very mysterious. I did not understand what it meant. But then we realized that it's an immediate consequence of this Hamilton-Jacobi equation. I mean, it is exactly what this Hamilton-Jacobi equation reduces to once you put the information about the model, which is the chi and the diffusion coefficient, which is equal to 1 in this case. So, and that was very gratifying, because this strange equation, then you could see that it's a consequence of a very general equation. Another model which fits exactly in the same scheme is this KMP model, which was mentioned by Derrida several times, but he didn't describe it. So maybe this is the time to describe it. This is this Kipnis-Marchioro model. The Marchioro-Presutti model is a model for heat conduction. So you have, and it is constructed this way. You have a lattice, one-dimensional lattice. At each position in the lattice, you have an harmonic oscillator. You have two different temperatures at the boundary. And then, what is the interaction of these oscillators? They exchange energy in a stochastic way, in a very simple way. So, so it's physically, I mean, it's a model of a rather different nature. So you see, you have a harmonic oscillator. Each oscillator has its own total energy. And then they have to interact in such a way to preserve energy. So, in every, let me call collisions between one oscillator and the next one, you have to preserve energy. Now, instead of the density, the energy, you have the energy. That is your, instead of the number of particles at each side, now you have the energy at each side. And now, this is the rule by which they exchange the energy. The rule is that in each collision, the new energy at site X is a fraction of the sum of the energies of his energy and the energy of the next oscillator, while the next oscillator gets the remaining fraction. And I mean, as it is, it looks deterministic, but then this parameter, this probability by which they exchange energy, has a distribution as a uniform distribution in 0, 1. Then you have boundaries, boundary conditions. Here you have the two temperatures, time minus and time plus. And the condition is that the oscillators at the boundaries have a Gibbs distribution with the corresponding temperatures. So it's a very simple norm. Now, instead of the density of particles, so you have a density of energy. You can prove that the aerodynamic equation is just the heat equation. So it's again very simple as the simple exclusion. D is equal to 1. But now there is a difference, and now I will emphasize it. The chi, in this case, is simply theta squared. So it's different. Now you can write the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, and again, as a simple exclusion, you can reduce this equation to a nonlinear equation, ordinary differential equation. You simply write this functional derivative as 1 over this energy density plus a tau, and then you find that this tau it satisfies this. Implies that this nonlinear differential equation has to be satisfied, and these are the boundary conditions with which you have to solve it. And it's clear that once you assign a profile in energy, in general, the solution of this equation will be a non-local function of this profile, exactly as in the simple exclusion case. So this shows that this Hamilton-Jacobi equation implies with these boundary conditions that you have long-range correlations. So this is the other model, the KMP model. Let me emphasize something. You remember I wrote it the other day, the chi for the simple exclusion symmetric is just rho 1 minus rho. Using the same notation, so this is a simple exclusion. So the chi in the same notation for K and P would be just rho squared. These are greatly different, are considerably different. So, because you see, this is a concave function, and this is a convex function. And this has enormous consequences on the behavior of the two models. I will touch now the question of dynamical phase transitions, so that this seems to be at the basis of the differences between these two models, and it's something that we don't understand yet completely, but that is what comes out. And but apparently there are no thermodynamic constraints that impose to these functions to be either convex or or concave.
Question. Huh? I mean, if I take a more general function, do you always can reduce it to an ordinary differential equation, or is that also...
No, I mean, this is...
What is the condition under which it actually reduces to an ordinary differential equation?
We have... that is what we hope for, that also in several dimensions. So the first condition, you have to be in one dimension. And the second condition is that, both the diffusion coefficient and the chi have to be at most quadratic. Otherwise, you see, because... that is an equation for the functional derivative. So you have to impose the condition that there exists a functional. So this will give you a condition on the on the second derivative. This have to be, and you are able to prove that you can satisfy the equality of the cross derivatives only under the conditions. So I first, in fact, it's very easy to reduce the Hamilton-Jacobi equation to a partial, nonlinear partial differential equation. That you can do almost always. But you are not able to satisfy the cross derivative condition, and then it becomes much more complicated to solve it. That's also for the benefit of the further discussion. As I mentioned the other day, large deviation theory, it's what does it mean? We have calculated the probability that you are in a stationary state and then you observe some fluctuation, large fluctuation. And we have seen that in the probability is exponentially small, so you may have to wait for the age of the universe. So, but however, you can also set up an active interpretation. Suppose I want, which is a very physical problem. Suppose, okay, I don't wait for the creation of such a fluctuation, but I want to act from the exterior on the system and create that fluctuation. That brings us immediately to a standard problem in control theory, and because I want to do it with the minimal dissipation possible. So it's just a dual way of reading the large deviation. So you see, the hydrodynamic equation will never have a solution which drives you from the stationary state to some fluctuation. This is a relaxation equation. That will never happen, but if you insert an external field, you may be able to do that. So you have you add an external field, and you don't want to determine this external field in such a way that you drive the system from the stationary state to the state you want, and you have to introduce a cost function. Now, which is the natural cost function in this problem? It's what Onsager called essentially the dissipation function. And so you introduce this quadratic functional for the field, and here you have to, this k is an operator, differential operator, which contains this chi, and chi contains the density, and so what you have to put here in calculated this time integral is the solution of this equation in presence of this v.
Is there only time here? There's no space?
Huh?
There's no space?
Oh yes, there is space. Space is always included in these brackets. It's integration over space. It's always integrated in space-time. But I emphasize the... Okay. Now you introduce the minimum of this functional I with respect to these external fields. Okay. And you try to... and you want to drive the system with a minimal cost. So with... and this is the cost function. So this is the minimal cost. Now, there is a well-known equation in control theory, which is called the Bellman equation, which says that well, you have to take the cost function, a term which contains the scalar product of the derivative of this optimal cost with the hydrodynamics. You have to take the inf of that and put that equal to zero. Well, in this case, to calculate this inf is trivial. And then you find that, in fact, this Bellman equation reduces to the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. So, and then if you substitute in this optimal field in the equation, you find that the optimal trajectory that you get is exactly the one that you got as the most probable trajectory in the large deviation interpretation, but you have to run it in the time-reversed direction. I emphasized the other day that the two trajectories, relaxation and creation, are different, and this is related to the time-reversed hydrodynamics. So, so it's very useful to think also of this large deviation in terms of external fields that you apply to obtain your problem. This it will help us in a moment. Okay. Now let me come to. So far we have been discussing only fluctuation of thermodynamic variables, like the density of particles or the density of energy. Now let's go to fluctuation of currents. The current is an observable which in its very definition includes time. So it's a different kind, besides being a vector in, but that is. So it's an effect we shall see that we get a much richer situation. You remember I defined the other day, but I don't repeat, it doesn't matter, there exists a definition of empirical current that you count how many particles go from one side to the other, and this is associated to the trajectory. And we say that when the number of degrees of freedom goes to infinity, because you take an average in space, so as when you define thermodynamic variables, it goes to an explicit expression in terms of the density and the Gonzaga matrix. I have put here just the gradient field, but in general we consider general external fields. Okay. So in this way we get the aerodynamic equation by simply saying that the time derivative of the density is minus the divergence of this expression. Now, the large deviations of the current are more complicated to calculate, but the final result is very simple and very similar to the what we found, actually simpler, in spite of the calculations are much more complicated, but the final result is simpler than in the. you see, we find that it's simply a quadratic form. Again, you find this chi minus 1 that we had in the large deviation functional for the density. And here you see there is simply the difference between the current, which describes the profile of the current, which describes the fluctuation, minus what I call the typical current. So the current which comes from the typical current is the law of large numbers. So it's this expression here. But now, what do you have to put here for this density? For this density, you have to put the solution of this equation, where you assign your fluctuation, then you calculate the corresponding density, you put it inside here, and this gives you the functional we describe the probability. Now, this is a very simple physical interpretation. What do you see? You see, here is the extra current given by the fluctuation. It's a quadratic form. This is the inverse of what you may call the chi is the transfer coefficient, so let's call it conductivity. So the inverse of the conductivity is the resistivity. So this is the power dissipated according to Ohm's law by the extra current. So the interpretation is extremely simple. So I repeat, I mean, you have the difference between the fluctuation and a typical current, and it's the power you usually calculate the power dissipated by R times the square of the current, and this is the structure of this expression, and you integrate over time, so you have the total power dissipated in a certain interval of time. So I don't sketch the proof of that, I'm just going to use it. It's interesting that actually this large deviation principle is more general than the one I wrote for the density. Why? Because you see the relationship between density and current, the time derivative of one is related to the divergence of the other one. So you see, while the current determines completely the density, the density determines the current up to a divergence zero field. So in fact, you can derive from this principle, you can derive also the principle, large deviation principle that I wrote the other day. But this is just a side remark. Now, let's go to a more physical problem. A physical problem is the one that has been discussed yesterday by Derrida. So we are interested in the fluctuations of the average current in a long interval. So we want to calculate the probability of a fluctuation of the average. Now, you see, so we introduce an average current. So this J is the fluctuation we want to consider. So it's we interpret it as a time average over a long interval. But this still may have a space dependence, and this is the macroscopic coordinate. We consider only divergence-free fluctuations. It's clear why, but because if this divergence were not zero, then you would have accumulation of particles in the system, or if the system could be emptied. So, however, you can prove rigorously that the probability of having a current, an average current with the divergence different from zero is zero. That can be okay. So it's clear that an average current it can be realized by many space-time profiles. You can have many of them, which in the end give you the same. So let me introduce the set of all the currents, the current profiles, which in an interval of time give rise to the same average, current. And then from...
Average means the time average, is that...
It's time average. It's time average. So, now we had the large from our large deviation principle for the current, we know how to calculate the probability of each one of these profiles. So, in order to get the probability of this average current, we have to minimize over this set over all possible currents belonging to this set. And then you have you reach a large deviation principle for the let me call phi the corresponding function, where this phi is simply related to, I repeated it, so I don't have to go back to the previous. So this is the previous functional that we introduced, and this is the large deviation functional for each j. So you have to take the inf of this over all possible j's which satisfy this constraint, and then you consider the limit for t going to infinity of this expression, and then you get a large deviation principle of this kind. You see, now instead of the number of degrees of freedom, so the volume, we have the product of the volume and time. So, this also has been proved rigorously, for example, for the simple exclusion process. And the proof, I must say, I didn't expect it, is quite technical. And because you see, you don't have only to take this if, and then you have to take this limit, and there are problems. But then we succeeded, and especially was Lorenzo Bertini who understood what was the mathematical tool to be used in this context. So, and then you can prove that these limits always exist. Okay, so we have a large deviation functional for the... Now, let's discuss a little bit the properties of this functional. You see, in the same way as when you do, we did for the density, for the thermodynamic variable, we got the out of equilibrium entropy. So we got the thermodynamic functional. So you see, this is in fact a very good thermodynamic functional. because this phi of j, you can prove easily that it is convex. So if you split your current into two parts, and then it follows almost immediately. It's a very simple calculation. So you see the beginning of what I would like to call space-time thermodynamics. And the point is that once you have an observable like the current, which also depends on time in its very definition, and then instead of considering space averages, you consider also time averages, then you get a good space-time thermodynamic variable, and you get a corresponding good thermodynamic functional, but it's a thermodynamic functional in space-time. And so the first property is a convex functional. Now, let me make the connection with what Derrida discussed yesterday. So let me introduce an auxiliary functional. So, you see, this is just the integrand in the Laplace deviation functional for the current. Here I have only space integrations. I don't consider time. And this expression here I have the difference between the time average current, which depends only on space. This is what I call the typical current, and so on. Now I define the minimum of this functional with respect to rho. So there is no time in this variational principle. And what I get is exactly the functional that Derrida introduced yesterday. It's the functional for which he discussed the additivity principle. Maybe there is a sign of difference, but so this is the functional of Bodineau and Derrida that was introduced in their paper. All our construction are in many dimensions. We introduce in that is not the greatest difficulty. It was introduced for the simple exclusion in one dimension. So this is the connection, and so now we have to examine what is the relationship between our phi, which comes from a variational principle in space and time, and this u, which is a variational, comes from a variational principle only in space. Now, the only general relationship that we can prove is that our phi, in general, is less equal than their functional. And it's quite natural, because phi is obtained from a variational principle from a larger set of functions. So, and in fact, this is proved very easily. I mean, you invent a trajectory, which on one hand, it gives you for this limit, which defines phi, just their the Bodineau-Derrida functional. You see, this functional is trajectory is a trajectory which goes from an initial state to rho star. Rho star is the minimizing is the minimizer of their functional. But since this is an invented trajectory, we don't know whether it corresponds to the minimum. So the only thing you can say is that you have this inequality. So the interesting question next is when they are they equal and where they are not equal. Now we have seen for the simple exclusion the calculation was absolutely correct. So in that case we expect them to be equal. Okay. Can we see on a basis of a general argument? And now I explain. Now there is a simple theorem that one can prove. Suppose we are even in many dimensions, but somehow our system is gradient. By this I mean that the diffusion coefficient is the diagonal in the space indices, and also the Onsager matrix is diagonal in the space. Now you can prove the following thing, that if there is no external field and this inequality is satisfied, then phi is equal to u. This is a general argument. You see that here it comes into play the convexity properties of chi. And if you apply it to the simple exclusion d is 1, so this the right hand side is 0, this 1, but the chi is concave, so the second derivative with respect to rho is negative. So it is satisfied. So it works for the simple exclusion. And it works on a basis of a very general... You see coming into play the convexity properties of this matrix, which seem to make the big difference between the difference model. Another condition, and here you can also allow an external field, is if this equality is satisfied, then again phi is equal to u. Now, can you find a model which satisfies this equality? Yes, the zero range always satisfies this equality. So it's a zero range without condensation. So the rates are such that you have no condensation. And so you see, the conclusion is that the first condition is satisfied for the simple exclusion. The second one is satisfied for the zero range. And now what about the KMP? No, KMP everything goes wrong. Because chi is convex. So this inequality cannot be satisfied. Neither of them can be satisfied. So now, when we realize this thing, so we decided to adopt the following definition, that when phi is less than u, we speak of a dynamical phase transition. So the question is whether can you give examples of dynamical phase transitions. Well, yesterday Derivat discussed the case of the simple exclusion. Now, the case in general, when you have two different chemical potentials, we have not been able to provide examples. But in the case, if you impose periodic boundary conditions, then you can give two examples. One is under certain condition, the simple exclusion, and the other one, essentially almost with no condition, is the KMP. And that is very intriguing, because while you can somehow understand what happens in the simple exclusion, it's much more difficult to have an intuition of what happens in the KMP. However, for the KMP, you provide a complete and rigorous proof that there is this inequality. So let me consider the following. So we have a situation with. Let's think about the. This is either model put on a circle. Let's discuss the simple exclusion. So in order to have a current, you must have some field inside. Let's suppose we have a constant field and which produces a movement in the gas. Now now we want to study fluctuations of the average current in this situation. Let's take the active point of view. So we act with external fields in order to produce the fluctuation. So you find that for values of this field which are not too large, and for fluctuations which are not too large, then you find that it's enough to act with a an external field which is only x dependent, and then you create the flotation. But then you apparently are not able to locate it precisely, but there must be a bifurcation point where this doesn't work anymore, and you have to adopt an external field which is both space and time dependent. At this point, you are going into a different dynamical regime, and the type of this has been numerically studied, partly analytically, partly numerically, by Baudinot and Derrida. What you find is a kind of traveling wave. So you have a bump in the density which travels around, and then you can prove, you verify that your phi is smaller, you gain in your phi with respect to the functional, and so this is an explicit example where you have this this transition, and clearly it would deserve a much more detailed analysis. What is the situation with the let me put the next transparency. What is the situation? So, let's take by the other boundary. If there is no external field, then we are essentially back in the sufficient conditions, and then phi is equal to u. So nothing happens. Notice that in this case where we have periodicity, you cannot lose mass through the boundaries, so the mass must be conserved. So in the case of a no external field, you calculate immediately both phi and u, they are equal, and it's simply a quadratic form in that. But then if you go to large E and large current fluctuations, then you can show that you gain by a traveling wave solution. This means that you gain in phi. One is not really able to calculate explicitly the u, but everything indicates that this inequality should be satisfied as it is. In the case of the KMP, on the other hand, you can do a very simple proof by using convex analysis, and you can prove explicitly that phi is less than u. But this also without external field. So we are in equilibrium. We are in equilibrium, and if you consider large current fluctuations, then if you want to produce them, you need a space-time dependent external field. Now, we don't know. The rigorous proof works for large currents, but maybe actually already from the beginning, even if you consider small fluctuation, you have from the beginning this inequality satisfied. So this will be a situation similar to the one-dimensional Isaac model, where you have the transition temperature at zero. So this is the now. Let me discuss. I'm afraid I will have to leave out the question, which to me is our interest of having. Maybe I will spend 2 minutes. I started a few minutes after, so I still have 15 minutes. Okay, but first I want to discuss another topic which has come out several times in this school, and that is the fluctuation theorem. So, can you relate what I have said so far to the fluctuation theorem? Well, yes. It's very simple. You simply analyze what is the behavior of this large deviation function for the average current under time reversal. This S, F, this is the I don't want to discuss it in detail. I just give you the result. So our problem is to discuss the time reversal properties of phi. So that is the then you can prove the following, that this is what is uncircled. It's not a very complicated calculation, but very instructive, that you can relate phi of j and phi of minus j, so current and the reverse current. And by the way, phi of minus j, you can prove that it is the phi associated to the time reversed process, so as you would expect, in fact. You find that this difference is given by an expression which doesn't contain anymore any specific reference to the particular model you are considering. And in fact, you see, what you have on the right-hand side, you have, this is essentially the work done by the external field, and this is the essentially the entropy variation at the boundaries. Because this is the chemical potential at the boundary, this is the normal to the boundaries. So the question is, let me call it the entropy reproduction by this current. Now, how you see, now it's very simple to relate it to the...
Sorry. What happens at the boundary is an entropy flow, it's not entropy production.
Entropy flow, you mean heat? Yeah. Well, I don't know, I don't have it here.
Well, there's a difference between the internal production of entropy,
yeah,
and the one that goes in and out through the boundary. They're two different terms.
Yeah, but I mean, the one where through the boundary is this term here.
Yeah, but you said entropy production, and I think...
Well, no, maybe it's not the right word, I mean. Okay.
What is that M there? That's the symbol at the end.
It's a normal. This M is normal to the boundaries. Okay, now... now we try to relate this to entropy production, essentially following the pattern that was followed by Leibovitz and Spohn in a paper where they discussed it. What is the difference? They always worked with a finite number of degrees of freedom. We work always in the thermodynamic limit, so it will be a thermodynamic fluctuation theorem. And so you see, what you do, you have to gain solve a variational problem. You fix a value for this right-hand side. Now, first of all, I mean, I call it fluctuation theory. You have seen it's linear in the current. So the odd part of that functional is always linear. That is typical of... So now I fix the value of this right-hand side, which is a scalar, Q. And then you define a function f of q taking the minimum for all the average currents which satisfy this condition, which are in this set. And then you find very simply that f of q minus f minus q is equal to minus q. So this is the scalar form of the fluctuation theorem. I mean, the fact that we derive it from a vector form, it's not a big generalization. But, I mean, for these conservative models, apparently, it's very simple in this thermodynamic limit. Now, for V equal 1, you see, you don't have to solve any variational problem because this set is made by one point. So in this case, there is a direct relationship between the entropy production, large deviation functional, and our phi. It's trivial in this case. So in the last few... I don't know, I don't want to discuss the... So in these last few minutes, I want to discuss a different application of the Hamilton-Yerkes equation. So we quit the current fluctuation chapter. We go back to our previous setting, but to show you the usefulness of this Hamilton-Yerkes equations, what I want to show you is that first of all, I take a model which is much more complicated than this one, but which has been widely used in physics. It's actually maybe a caricature, but it's what is called the Kawasaki-Glauber dynamics, which is a non-conservative dynamics, which was widely used for dynamical critical phenomena in the 70s. So, and I will show you that we start from states which have all the features of equilibrium states. But then we let the microscopic dynamics to violate the time reversal. So they violate the detailed balance condition. And then we see the appearance of some features of non-equilibrium states, in particular the long-range correlations. And that here I have to make a distinction. So, well, in the end, these states are something that are in, it's, I wouldn't call them completely equilibrium states and not even non-equilibrium states. Somehow they may resemble a system in a magnetic field. I mean, that's... So, what is the dynamics of this model? You have a, so you have a first part which is essentially the exclusion. So, it's a simple exclusion. But then you have another process. A particle can disappear on the occupied side or appear if this is empty. And this is a Glauber process. So, you have both processes. Now you can prove again hydrodynamics. However, it's not anymore of divergence type because the number of particles is preserved only in the average in an equilibrium state. And you find that, in fact, you get a reaction diffusion type equation or Landau-Ginzburg type equations, where these coefficients can be easily calculated. And this coefficient, now you study, I don't have time to do it, but it's very instructive. You study under what conditions there exists a measure for which this process is time reversible. And then you find that actually the only measure for which it can be time reversible is a Bernoulli type measure. And this imposes very strict conditions on the rates of the Glauber dynamics. And these strict conditions at the macroscopic level impose that the two coefficients, B and D, have the following form. So there is a common factor, maybe a polynomial, and then you have these two, rho and 1 minus rho. And this polynomial has to be. So if you think that this part here derives from a potential, this implies that this potential is only one minimum.
Where does the rho T1 plus 1 equals
rho? Oh, these are the boundary conditions. I've imposed the periodic boundary conditions. But you could work also with the reservoirs with the same chemical potentials. Okay, so this is a much more complicated functional, and the time reversibility imposes very strict conditions on the Glauber average, on the Glauber coefficients, and the Glauber rates. And this comes up at the macroscopic level with the structure I've indicated for the B and D coefficient. Now, if those are satisfied, then you get that the invariant measure is a Bernoulli measure and everything. But now, Now, for this type of model, the large deviation functional was calculated many years ago by Claudio Landim, and it's a very complicated object. In fact, you cannot write it in such an explicit way as we did for the simple exclusion, because you have to introduce an external field which creates the fluctuation, and contrary to what at least was my intuition, the process profits from both Kawasaki and Glauber. So in the large deviation functional they both appear, and to optimize the probability, but it has an horrible looking aspect. So this is the large deviation function. So you see, you get so this is the part so it has to be calculated in this way. You see, this is the part essentially due to the simple exclusion, but the part due to the Glauber dynamics, you see, is what is this H? You see, you have introduced an external field in the aerodynamics, and which modifies also these coefficients. Then you have to, if you fix a fluctuation, you have to solve this equation with respect to H, insert it here, and then, of course, you cannot do that explicitly. That's a very complicated equation. You can do it by a convergence. You can write a convergence series for this. That actually. So, okay, if the conditions of time reversibility are satisfied, then you find that the fluctuation which the trajectory which creates a fluctuation is just the time reversed of the relaxation. But you see, now we have two possibilities. Suppose that the dynamics microscopically is not time reversible. However, when you go to the macroscopic level, you lose some information. So your coefficient may maintain the same form even if the macroscopic dynamics is not time reversible. And you can give a very simple example. For example, I mean, if the rate at which you create and destroy particles depends on the left and right site, or on the two next sites, macroscopically you don't see this difference. So you have dynamics which violate time reversal which do not change this form. Okay, so you don't see the time reversal violation at the microscopic level. I call this weak time reversal, weak violation of time reversal. But you may have a violation of time reversal of the microscopic dynamics for which this form is not respected. And if you have that, then you can show that you have long-range correlations. That you do again by the Hamilton-Jacobi. Hamilton-Jacobi, now it's horrible. You get exponential of the functions you have to calculate. But you can do perturbation theory if you are sufficiently near to equilibrium. So one tries a quadratic approximation for the entropy. So one writes near equilibrium an expression of this kind with a kernel. And the question then becomes whether there are or not long correlation depends whether this kernel is local or not. Then once you insert this expression in this equation and you expand, you find that this kernel has to satisfy these differential equations. And you see, these coefficients which appear are just the expansions of B and D around the equilibrium. The equilibrium is a constant. Now, if K, in order to have a K local, so K has to be of this form, a function and then a delta function, then it can be a solution if these two conditions are satisfied. Okay, the first one is trivial, but the second equation is satisfied only if time this what I call macroscopic time reversal invariance is satisfied. So, I mean, from the conditions on the coefficients imposed by time reversibility, you get that this expression must be zero. If it is not zero, then time reversal is violated, and at the same type, the equation has long-range solutions. So you see that it's very intricate, the connection between this long-range correlation. And I think that violation of time reversal is a sufficiently general point of view to see what happens. And you see, you may have a weak violation and then nothing happens at the macroscopic level, but if you have a strong violation, then again, so these features of non-equilibrium state appear. And so, well, I don't know exactly how to call this state, but anyway. So I think this, you see, in quantum field theory, there is causality imposed a very simple conclusion. There is what is called the TCP theorem. So time reversal is related to parity and charge conjugation. You can do a somewhat similar game also in these models. We did it with Gabrielli and Landim 10 years ago. And in fact, you have classes of models where you have a kind of TCP actually, because if you put charges, you get also TCP. But anyway, I think the relationship between time reversal and space properties seems to be quite intricate and should be studied further. That's my opinion. Okay, thank you very much for listening.